Prepare to be captivated by the business story of the week, hosted by me, Shaheen Shan. Join us on a journey through the twists and turns of entrepreneurial triumphs and setbacks. Immerse yourself in the narrative and witness the magic that turns dreams into reality. This is Business Story of the Week.
And welcome back, folks. Welcome back to Business Story of the Week. I am your host, Joshua, and today is probably one of the most looked forward episodes. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time, a couple of weeks at least, and it's because of stories. Just like in our title of the show, it's really all about stories. I'm going to read this out real quick. It's because our mindset is a story we tell ourselves, and the stories we tell ourselves about what we can and can't do and what is possible and is impossible. And at Enlifted, this is what they do. They study how words and breath create that mindset and have fun making it along the way. Mark England, ladies and gentlemen, has been coaching full-time for the past 17 years. He has done over 5,000 coaching sessions, delivered over 750 workshops, created seven-figure coaching brands, built three online courses, certified 400-plus Enlifted coaches, and guested on 391 podcasts, and I am honored to have him on here as podcast number 395. Am I saying that right, Mark? Welcome to the show.
You're saying that right, Joshua. Thank you. Thank you very much for the intro. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Yes, thank you. Mark, you are the co-founder. You are the head coach at Enlifted. You've been researching, presenting, and coaching for the past 16 years. But where did the journey begin, Mark? It's always going to be the story. I want to hear that story. And I always start this interview like that. Mm-hmm. Childhood, start from the very beginning. Did you always want to be a coach?
No. And teaching comes naturally to me. And what I, in my personal professional opinion, the best coaches out there teach as well. They teach while they're coaching. Okay. Yes. So it's a way of helping someone develop a skill set, because there are violin coaches, there are jiu-jitsu coaches, there are presentation coaches, there are mindset coaches, whatever that is. And then also teaching the skill, because guess what? That's how things move forward. And at some point in time, I'm not doing this anymore. And so coaching, this was so not on my radar, man. What was fighting. So, I wrestled in high school and I took my first jiu-jitsu class. It was the first time I ever fell in love.
Let's go.
You know, minus a couple beautiful women out of the conversation. It was the first time I ever fell in love with something. It was in 1996, and I'm in a PE class at college, and the instructor, he goes, "Are there any wrestlers in the room?" And I raise my hand, and he goes, "We do jiu-jitsu two nights a week, Tuesday and Thursday. Come check it out." So I went in there. I'm a wrestler. I got this. I don't got this. I got choked, bro. I got choked. Okay, fine. I pin you. You pin me. Very cool. Okay, but choking someone, I'd never felt that before, and I was like, "Oh my God, I've got to learn this." And so that turned into my first obsession. Right. And so I trained hard for 6 years during college, and then outside of college, I had a handful of MMA fights, a handful of amateur kickboxing fights. I won a couple of state titles in amateur kickboxing. And then I'm like, oh, because all my friends were, they were going pro and opening schools. And I was like, wow, I'm going to do that too. And I'm going to do it with a little bit of flair. I'm going to move to Thailand for a year and go over there. That happened. And I'll stay over there for a year and polish up my skills and then come back and go pro. So I move over there in February 2002 with my girlfriend from college. And 6 months into that year-long odyssey, I had my second knee surgery.
Oh.
And, yeah, and the whole I watched what my dream was evaporate. The doctor said I remember literally it was yesterday. He goes, "Your career as a fighter is over. You could become a very good swimmer." Mm-hmm. I'm 27 mm-hmm. years old, everybody. I'm making pictures of me swimming laps next to grandma. That's not what I had in mind. And so darkness descended. And this is something that we talk about a lot, everybody. There's a real good chance I'm going to recite the definition of the victim mentality on this podcast for all the right reasons. And one of them is most people have never heard the definition of the victim mentality. And what it does is it places a very important component into the conversation about mindset, mm-hmm. which is the story that we mm-hmm. tell ourselves. That's the enlifted definition of mindset. We have the simple, most simple and practical and best definition of mindset in the game. Go to Google. Go to Google and put in definition of mindset and watch what comes up on the first page. You're going to get 17 definitions, and a lot of them are just like they're a paragraph long and super complicated and confusing, and you're like, oh, what? And so when without at least a working definition, I'm going to give you the verbatim definition, a working definition of the victim mentality, a conversation mm-hmm. about mindset it's crippled. And one of the main reasons is that that's why people start studying mindset to begin with is because they've got a problem somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you start scratching the surface of that story, and it's the victim mentality is going to be in there because of the language patterns. We're going to talk about that a lot. Precisely. So I go, mm-hmm. can I drop F-bombs on here?
Oh, damn right. Let's go.
Okay, perfect. So I go over there and I fuck everything up. And I'd only had my passport for 2 years, man. I had 3 going away parties. It was the biggest move I'd ever made in my uh-huh. life. Uh-huh. And so I used that experience as the final piece of damning evidence in a case I was secretly making against myself that I was not good mm-hmm. enough. A telephobia, look that up. A telephobia, the fear of not being good enough. Yep. Okay. The fear of not being good enough. There was something wrong with me and I was somehow doomed to fail. And now I've got the final piece of proof. There it is. Okay. That's how I was interpreting the situation. And darkness descended, dude. And I didn't laugh for a year. Because that's what the victim mentality will do. It'll suck the joy and the air out of you. It'll suck the joy off your face. Mm-hmm. And it'll trap your breath in your chest. It'll suck the air out of your lungs and traps your breath in your chest. And then you're in a real interesting spot, also known as a pickle mm-hmm. in the United States. Yeah, people don't say that word anymore, but it's like, you know, that's some old school words.
Real pickle, for sure.
You're in a real pickle now. Gosh, mm-hmm. gee. And so after a year of that, it was the first piece of uh-huh. wisdom that I ever remember showing up in my life. And after a year of being a miserable bastard, so much so my girlfriend had to leave. She couldn't take it. I understand. And after a year of being that way, I looked at myself and I said, bro, are you going to be complaining about this when you're 60, 55, 60? Right. Yeah. And I was like, if you do that, If you do that, then you really are the loser you're afraid that you are.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
Yeah. As in, I looked down the path, I saw the end result, and I go, literally anything but that. Anything but that. Mm-hmm. And right around that same time, my vice principal, so I ended up living in Thailand for 10 years, which still sounds strange to say.
He ended up 10 years.
Yeah, I was over there for a decade.
A decade?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, 5 years in Bangkok as an elementary school sports teacher, and then five years as a coach, as a practitioner down on an island of Koh Samui. Yeah. Okay. And so.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So 10 years in Thailand.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were.
Keep going.
Elementary coach in the US. I didn't know you did that in Thailand as well.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's okay. That's where I taught.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. So I come, that's why I started, you know, did you always want to be a coach? No, but I've been a teacher, and this, it's the same thing. So I have a degree. I've got a master's degree in education, and yes, I was an elementary school sports teacher for 5 years. So that's where the education piece comes from. And, and then my vice principal came back from this weirdo place where people were doing cleanses, on an island in the Gulf of Thailand called Koh Samui. He goes, "Hey man, I really enjoyed this. I didn't eat shit for 3 days and I paid for it and drank a bunch of coconuts and did some yoga and had some steam rooms and I feel great. You should go down there. You'd like it." And I was like, "Huh." So I went and, paid to not eat for 7 days. It's quite the business model. And I came back feeling better. And I said, "Well, that's something that I can do, right? I can participate. Mm-hmm. This is something that I can do. Here's some rocket science math for you, everybody. Do something different, get something different. Do something better, get something better. Wow, it's so high level." And so I was like, "Okay, I'm in." And I kept going back down there. The third trip down, I went to an emotional detoxification workshop.
Right.
One night in the yoga sala, and me and all my wisdom, I laughed at the name. I was like, "Emotional detoxification." But I went.
Emotional detoxification.
Yeah, I was laughing at it. I was like, "Emotions? What are you, gay?" It's like, and then, I know you're not supposed to say shit like that now, but I'm from the 80s, whatever. And so I go to this workshop, and he's talking directly to me about my victim mentality. And he's talking about words, and he's talking about stories, and he's talking about breath, and he's talking about getting fixated on things and turning the world against you in your head. And and then he raised his head. He said, "Hey, is anybody stuck on a story?" And this woman raised her hand. And she said, he said, "I am. I got dumped 4.5 years ago, and I haven't been able to focus on anything since. I hate men now." And real quick, here's the story. It was a bad breakup. So her and her friends, they were in college. Her and her friends go down to the beach for beach week. Her boyfriend and his friends get the house next door.
Okay.
Add alcohol. These are college kids. Add alcohol, press play.
Right.
Okay. It's like something's going to happen. So he hooks up with her best friend in front of everybody one night and then dumps her in front of everybody the next night.
Oh, my God.
Can we all say ouchie on three?
Ouch.
And so he had her tell the story, everybody. So we talk at Enlifted, we talk a lot about the mechanics of storytelling, okay? The mechanical, the process of it, the how, not so much the why. Because if you understand the how, then eventually you're going to get to the why, okay? It's a much better place to focus. And I'll explain why as we go. So he had her play the story three times. First time, she just told it, and he didn't touch anything. And at the end, she's angry and crying and a real mess. The second time through, he started to slow. He had her tell the story a little slower.
Okay.
And which loosens some things up, mainly her breath. So very important, everybody. Mm-hmm. If you got a pen and a piece of paper and you're into taking notes, cool. 30, 50, 80. 30, 50, 80. So here's the teacher. Mm-hmm. 30, 50, 80. We remember 30% of what we hear, 50% of what we write, and 80% of what we turn around, teach, share, or explain. So if you put pen to paper about anything that you like in this podcast, then you're going to get more retention on it. So here's one of the principles. The faster the story goes, the harder it is to change.
Whoa.
The faster the story goes, the harder it is to change, because there's a direct correlation to the speed at which we tell stories and our breath.
Yes.
Stories go, we've all seen this. We've all done this. you know, the person talking a mile a minute. And then we say things like, I couldn't get a word in edgewise, like the edge of a blade, or it's like talking to a brick wall. And so the faster the story goes, the higher and tighter the breath is. Okay. And when the breath is trapped in the chest, I'm talking to me, buddy. I'm talking to me. I'm talking to you, Joshua. I'm talking to everybody listening. When your breath is trapped in your chest, good luck changing your mindset. Good luck changing the story. Cause that's the demonstration of attachment to the words. When my breath is trapped in the, you can read 1,000 books on non-attachment. And if your breath is trapped in the chest, you're attached. Okay. It's the number one metric. And so he slowed the story down, and when the story starts to slow down, the breath starts to loosen up. Then you can start looking at the words. And most people are not thinking about their thinking. So shout out to the great Alan Watts. He was the greatest Zen teacher the West has ever known and or will ever know. And he said, when you learn to think about your thinking, you become alive in a new way.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I know. When you learn to think about your thinking, you become alive in a new way. And most people are not thinking about their thinking. They're just thinking, also known as being consumed and absorbed with the story.
Yes. Okay? Yes, that's it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And when you've got a job to do, when you've got a goal, you know, you want to start your own business, create a plan, move forward. The story that you tell yourself to yourself about yourself is the thing that will make or break you. Okay. People don't wake up in the middle of the night sweating about what QuickBooks thing to use or email funnels. It's the fear of being seen that gets people to lock up, flinch, overthink everything, and eventually burn themselves out on a psychological, and they just burn the emotional gas tank and usually whatever funds they have as well. So you get the story working for you. Most people's language is working against them, everybody. You didn't learn this in school. Absolutely. We help people get their language working for them. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, the ancients knew this. We'll get to abracadabra here. And so the second time, slowed down the story. The breath starts to loosen up. And then the third time through, he stopped her at the sentence that held the whole thing together.
Wow. Okay.
Which was this one sentence. And on another side note, write this down, everybody. Of a spell, Webster's definition, not mine. Mm-hmm. Webster's definition of a spell is a word or a combination of words of great influence. That's it. And so the spell that held this whole thing together was this. He did that to me.
To me. Yep.
Correct. He did that to me. And he was smart. He ended up being my mentor in this work. Barry Musgrave, he's 80 years old. Still doing it. Wow. And which does dovetail into my 50-year goal, which we'll bring up too because it's fun.
Great. Okay, let's use it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had to say it three times. So she's focused on the one sentence, the number one sentence. And then also everybody in the crowd was focusing on that sentence too, which was that. He did that to me. And he said, finally, he said, take out that last word and put in himself.
There you go.
And it was right. It was such a radical departure from the story that she was relentlessly telling herself since it happened. This is over in Thailand. This happened in the States 4.5 years ago, and she's still hella pissed. And so. The delivery was clunky of the new sentence, and it went up at the end. It's called uptalk. So she was questioning it. Okay. This is how she delivered it. He did that to himself? Mm-hmm. And then you see the breath unlock. He did do that to himself. And then she started just going off about how it was actually worse for him, and he lost friends. And then she finally said, you know, that was never going to work out anyway. The guy was actually really weird. And she walked, right? You're just literally watching magic. And by definition. And And she walked out of there with a new story. And I saw that and I was like, that's not my story, but that's my story. Cause I had a, he did that to me story too. We were just warming up. He shouldn't have been kicking that hard. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was the second time I fell in love on site. First time getting choked. Sounds weird. Second time watching someone take out one word and the whole thing gets flipped on its head. Now, what I just said, by definition, magic by definition. So when I say abracadabra, what do we all, most people, almost everybody, some people go to Steve Miller Band, think of immediately, and it's still the same thing. People think of abracadabra, they think of magic, right?
Yes.
Everybody does.
Yes.
And abracadabra is, it's actually way cooler than that. It's Aramaic. Which is one of the languages, one of the two languages Jesus spoke, is the language the original Old Testament was written in, and they would triangulate abracadabra and wear it around their neck.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I've never seen that. Oh, buddy, yeah. They would triangulate abracadabra just like this and wear it around their neck to remind them of the power and the mechanism of the spoken word, because they knew if they got it wrong, as in the words were put together in certain ways, they were going to make things way worse for themselves. They were going to play the blame game. They were going to sit at the gossip table. They were going to waste time, burn their energy, trap their breath. And then, if you take it far enough, this is the real scary shit, is deathbed regrets.
Before we get onto that abracadabra, Mark, let's recap that whole part. 10 years on Thailand. You were blaming the guy who kicked your knee. You found your mentor. You found the story of this girl, transformed her entire story that she was pissed her entire life. Was this prior to your fight with Jim Stutt, Steve Rayner? You had those fights under your belt too, right? Was this prior
to
that?
This was after that. You looked me up.
Dude, I looked you up. I'm telling you, I'm into MMA. I watched that. I train jiu-jitsu as well.
Nice. So,
dude, bro, I love it. I love getting choked out. It does sound weird now.
It does sound weird. It does sound weird, and there's something about it because it's so definitive. If somebody gets you in a choke and you have to give up because you're about to pass out or you're freaking out and you can't see it, like taken far enough, everything goes black. It's like, no, that person, if they kept going, they would have killed you. You would have been dead. Yes. So you gave up to save your life or a limb it's no joke. It is no joke. It's super badass. I mean, you'll like this.
Please. Yes. Yes. Of course you got a mat. Of course you got the full gym over there. I've wanted to watch that as soon as we started. But it's great. It's fantastic, Mark.
So Steve Rayner, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. That I fought that dude at the state fairgrounds in Virginia in front of I mean, again, this is amateur regional scene, and he was terrorizing the amateur regional scene. He was a Navy SEAL out of Virginia Beach, and he was 8-1. And I was 1-1. He was a purple belt, which back in 2000, like, purple belts had their own schools, right?
Yes, they did. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, really, if you're a blue belt, it was a thing. And I was a white belt, 1-1 white belt. He was an 8-1 purple belt. Nobody would fucking fight this guy. And I get a call from he was out of Frank Cucci's gym. I forget their name, but they were bad. Those guys were nasty. And my kickboxing coach, or the guy that ran the karate center, which is where we all, that was the original MMA fight team out of Richmond. I'll always be proud of that. Right. He called me up, and I'm in Radford, and he goes, "Hey man, I got a guy, everybody's dodging." And I'd heard of this guy. And he goes, "Will you fight him?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll fight him."
Wow.
Man. Yeah. And yeah, Randy Couture was one of the judges. It was really cool.
Was he? That's crazy.
I mean, I wasn't supposed to win, and I didn't. I lost a split decision. I went eight. It was an 8-minute round, dude. There was just one 8-minute round.
Oh, okay.
My first MMA fight was one 10-minute round.
Okay, that's insane. That is insane.
It's insane. Like, if, like you understand what that means. Sucksville. It's like...
8-minute round, come on.
Yeah.
And the first one was a 10-minute round. You lost...
It was a 10-minute round.
You lost... Was it a split decision?
The first one, I also, I lost my first and third MMA fight in one of the other ones. The first one, it went 10 minutes. Yeah, that was him. I won that one. I was a guillotine.
Yeah, you won
that
was
my second fight. That was my second fight.
Second fight.
With a guillotine.
And then you went on to fight Steve Rayner April 8th. That was a decision loss.
Yep. Decision loss.
Decision.
It was a split decision, which it shouldn't have been because he legitimately beat me. And it was just, you know why there was a split decision? Because Flex Wheeler was one of the other judges. So Flex Wheeler was this huge, he was Mr. Olympia. He didn't know shit about fighting. He didn't know what he was looking at. And the guy ended up killing his wife and another dude, like knifed him to death because he was roid raging and she was cheating on him. And he came home and like, yeah, Flex is in prison, man. Flex, he should have stayed in the gym and flexed. No, he turned into knife wheeler.
That's crazy.
Flex Wheeler, knife wheeler.
Knife wheeler. That's funny.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Well, this is fun because we could go in a lot of directions now with this. Let's talk about UFC 300 on either the last thing we talk about on this podcast or when we hit. Stop.
UFC 300.
Yeah, I got opinions, bro. It's happening. Yeah. Yeah, man. And then, you know, the definition, let's go over some of those definitions again. The definition of abracadabra, this is very important.
Before we really get into that, okay, let me just this is prior to your fight. This is 10 years in Thailand, and now you've come up with all these new knowledge. You've taken it all in. Now, at Enlifted, you guys emphasize the impact of words, right?
For sure.
And first of all, I thank you guys. Thank you for that free access. We're going through it. We're simmering
My pleasure.
Through it. And that abracadabra is really one of the most, you know, freaking like life-changing information I've ever heard. I want you to explain it to us, to the audience and listeners. What does abracadabra mean and why is it so significant compared to how we commonly know it?
Abracadabra, again, it's Aramaic, okay, so which is an ancient language, is still spoken in some parts of the Middle East.
Right.
And it translates to with my word I create or with my word I influence.
I influence, yes.
And this is an eternal concept, everybody. There have been people that have been thinking about their thinking in all traditions, in all cultures throughout time. It's the thing, it's one of the main things to focus on because it's directly involved with how well you breathe. And if your breath is trapped in your chest, if you win the breathing game, so we talk about low and slow breathing a lot in context to coaching, okay? So most coaches, okay, we'll say it like this first. Catchy little jingle with the breath. High and tight creates the fight.
Wow.
Low and slow creates the flow. High and tight creates the fight in someone's personal life or even in a coaching scenario. What do you mean fight your clients? What I mean is get sucked into their drama and trauma bond with them. So drama bonding.
Fights.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. And most coaches are not focusing anywhere near enough on how well they're breathing. And if you're in, this applies to if you're in, I know this is a business story of the week. If you're in a position of management, it is super important for you to breathe well. If you are, if you're giving a work presentation, it is super important for you to breathe well. If you are on a sales team, it is super important for you to breathe well. The fastest way to make you sound like an amateur on a sales call is to trap your breath in your chest and talk really fast. Okay.
Yes.
You're going to sound like, because you will be, you're going to sound nervous because you're nervous. Exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to listen worth a shit. It's mm-hmm. called amygdala hijack. Look that up. When someone's mm-hmm. breath is trapped in their chest, they get fixated and focused on something. Okay. They lose mm-hmm. access to their peripheral vision and creative faculties, and their listening skills tank. Now you put, yes, you combine someone who wants to just talk, because they're nervous, with bad listening skills, and I'll show you a bad salesman.
Horrible.
I'll show you a bad presenter. I'll show you a bad manager. Because guess what? Answers push, everybody. Questions pull. So file this under the mechanics of storytelling too. Answers push. Questions pull. Answers I tell them. Questions they tell them. So in a coaching scenario, when So the enlifted definition of a drama bond, and it sounds a little bit harsh at first, and we advise our coaches not to believe. I advise any clinician, therapist, psychologist, coach, don't believe your clients. Do not believe them. But I want to be compassionate. You're not. Do not believe your client's story. Observe your client's story. Because guess what? If you do a half mediocre job, they're going to leave with a different and better story. So why would you believe and get sucked into the first version that comes out of their mouth? Your job is to help them change the story, assuming you're there for the right reasons.
There you go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when someone breathes low and slow, so I just talked about what happens when someone breathes high and tight. Uh-huh. They get fixated, amygdala hijack, look it up. When someone breathes low and slow, then they zoom out. Good breathing. Here it is, everybody. Here's some more rocket science math. Breathing equals good coaching, because good breathing equals good listening, and good listening equals good coaching. So good breathing equals good coaching. And so when you breathe low and slow and observe your client's story, don't get sucked into it, then you get to pay attention to the most important components. Okay. Again, mechanics, mechanism, building blocks. Yes. And the five main things: one, the words that they're using. Your clients aren't paying attention to the words they're using. They're being hijacked by the words they're using. The words that they use, the rate of speech. How fast are they talking? Super important. Yes. Body language. How are they moving while they're telling you the story? Inflection. Mm-hmm. And then breath. You pay attention to those five things and you've got the levers now. Those are the levers that you can pull and move.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And then another great reason to breathe low and slow while you're coaching. Mm-hmm. is to not trauma bond with your clients. Write this down, everybody. Drama bonding leads to trauma bonding. Drama bond, that's believing your client's story, getting sucked into it. And then trauma bonding is when the client and the coach are in a stress response at the same time. That's a big-ass mess.
Yeah, that's just like a cycle.
Exactly right. It's a revolution. It's a revolution versus an evolution. So a revolution, everybody, the difference is it's self-evident once it's mm-hmm. – and I'm good at – because I am a very simple person. I'm good at talking about things simply. So a revolution is the story plus the feeling plus breath trapped in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Revolve. It's all coming around again. You're going to get it again.
Yes,
all the stuff. The universe doesn't care if you're sick of it or not. If you put two and two together, you're getting four. If you put "he did that to me," say that again, you're getting the victim villain mental imagery, regardless of how tired you are of feeling like the world's out to get you. Okay? The universe is fair in that regard. And so an evolution, and then these people are like, we need a revolution. They either don't know what they're talking about or they're sinister, because all of that chaos and including the guillotines and the gas chambers and the concentration camps are coming around again with the revolution. Oh, we're going to do it right this time. No, you're not. No, you're not.
No, you're not. Of course not.
Breath low and slow, that's an evolution. So story plus feeling and emotion, we're built to tell stories, we're built to feel things, and then you add in abdominal breathing, low and slow breathing, then you get an evolution. Then things change. They move forward. They develop. They get up-leveled. Okay, if you want to up-level your game, everybody, in any aspect of your business, breathe better while you're doing it.
Breathe better, definitely. All the time.
Breathe. Breathing.
Observe your breathing. Whatever that you are doing.
Yes.
This is very practical. It's very practical advice and practical information because we're not necessarily taught these, right? And most most of the time when we hear about breathing, we hear it in the context of yoga, we hear it in the context of meditation or something spiritual, something, how you call this, something supernatural, so to speak. But this is more practical sense, right? Because it draws people away when you start talking about supernatural shit. But when you talk about it in the aspect of like you just need to breathe slower, man, and you'll concentrate, you'll think better, you'll think clearly. Mark, tell us again how this relates back to abracadabra.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very simple. Good luck. You're separating your words from your breath.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's it.
We're basically walking accordions with legs. Mm-hmm. Good. I'm going to say it again. Good, right? Good luck separating your words from your breath.
Wow.
You got to have both.
You gotta have both.
And the quality of your breath dictates the quality of your sounds. Uh-huh. And when you're breathing better, not only are you going to be listening better, when it's time for you to talk, okay, you'll have better timing, you'll have better rhythm, you'll have better inflection. So you'll be able to play the words, the notes. It's a song. Exactly. Yeah. You'll be able to play the words better. So you'll be more of an interesting person to listen to, which is kind of important. When I think about the most lonely people that I know, they're bad communicators. They're bad storytellers. People don't like listening to them. Why don't they like listening to them? Because their rhythm and their timing is whack. I got an associate that you'll start a conversation with him and he'll ask a question. You'll get a third or half of the way through your answer and he'll ask another question. So he breaks your rhythm. And then you start talking, get into, ask another question. He breaks the rhythm. And so it's not enjoyable to go back and forth. It's a very jagged, quote unquote, jagged interaction. And then you got transcriptors. Then you got transcriptors. So Voltaire, a French diplomat, he said, the secret to being boring is saying everything. So here's what transcripts from court. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to get up this morning. My alarm went off at 6:45, but I just decided to stay in bed for about another 10 minutes. And then I got up. I did get up at 6:55, and I was going to put on my wool socks, but I didn't put. I prefer cotton socks more. And then after I got up, I was thinking, do I want Earl Grey tea or do I want coffee? But then I could have decaf because I did drink 2 cups of coffee yesterday, and I usually like to drink one, because if I drink two, then it messes up my stomach and I can't really enjoy my lunch. But no one's invited me to lunch in a while. I should probably join that networking group. But then again, it's I'm not really sure if that's the right networking group for me, because there's two or three that I've been looking at for a while, and they all have different reasons why I could or shouldn't join them. But I know I really need to do that to get my business off the ground. There is part of me that's a little social anxious. I could do that. I'm just riffing, dude, off the top of my head. They don't say anything.
They don't say anything. It's nothing. It's such a conceited way of telling your stories, because
Dude, you nailed that shit. It's conceited. It's a conceited way of telling the story because you think you're more important than you are, because I'm going to tell you every.
Exactly. So focused on what you do. It's only what you think of. And
that's
it's like
high level.
It's another thing to like, you're not listening. It's not just one thing about listening to others. Like, you're better listener when you breathe better. But if you're not also breathing better, you don't listen to yourself better. So you talk like you talk your head off and you don't even realize how boring you are. So it's also a failure of listening to yourself.
Dude, you just nailed that. It's yes. It's conceited.
It is a conceited.
And you know what? It's conceited and it's desperate. So those people are so starved for connection because no one wants to connect with them because you're boring as hell. Because you're saying everything, you're not listening, you're not breathing, and then you put a side order of conceitedness.
Precisely.
That's a word on top of that, and you've got a good recipe.
You got a really bad recipe, or a good recipe for disaster, rather. Mark,
yeah.
in one of your podcasts, I think I'm trying to remember the name. I wrote it down, but you said people's language trick them into being spectators.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be an NPC of your life. And this relates back to failing to listen to your own voice. And because it all goes back to what you teach at Unlifted. Words become your stories and stories become your reality. And if you fail to have the right language, you trick yourself into spectating your own life and not participating and not taking control of that own life. Talk to us a little bit about that, Mark, and how did you come about that concept? I mean, you've been a language instructor for a while and language educator.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, one of those answers, part of the answer to those questions is that this work has held my attention. I was a very bad student in school. I wasn't disruptive. I was destructive on purpose. Because, and then it took me a while to figure out why. I thought I was just, stupid and mean. And turns out that I was bored. Okay. I didn't care about what was being taught in high school. Okay. That shit was boring as hell. And I was just conditioned to be used to it. It's just something you do, go to school and sit there and hate life, stare off into space and get bad grades and cause problems. And jiu-jitsu, like I said, was the first thing that I fell in love with, and it just holds my attention. I mean, it's still like I'm a fan. I don't roll much anymore, and that means nothing to me in one sense because I will always watch. I don't watch any other sports. I don't give a fuck about any other sports. It's MMA or die, bitches.
MMA or die. Let's go.
Combat, submission, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, MMA, everything else can suck it. I don't care who shot a three-pointer, whatever. Okay, I want to watch somebody. Yeah. And then the second thing was, like I said, this work. And this work has held my attention the whole time. Like nothing else, like nothing else I've ever experienced. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I started.
Right.
After 10 years of doing this work, we gave a TEDx talk and knocked that shit out of the park. So if you're familiar with TEDx, so you can go to YouTube and type in my name, TEDx talk. So it was in front of 1,800 people. Live streamed to 150,000 people, recorded forever on the TEDx website, regardless of how you do. And we just smashed it because we're professionals and we know how to prepare. And I got off stage and I went back to my hotel room and I just stared at the wall. It was a wild experience, positively. And I go, I'm in. I commit. I'm going to do this shit for 50 years professionally, full time, to see what I can pull off. So because I've got that 50-year goal, I've got plenty of time to get 1,000 podcasts. I know I'm going to do it. This is 395. And so I went into my calendar, and let me back up. So I went and studied at one point in time after 3 years into this stuff. I took my resources and traveled around the world several times. And I got to 8 of the 9 founders of the systems that most impressed me that I knew of. There's great shit out there that I don't know about. And one of the things was NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Neuro-linguistic programming, uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I went and did my practitioner training with Richard Bandler in London in 2011, and went back and did my master practitioner training London in 2012. And it was 5 days and then 7 days. Newsflash, everybody. Okay. You can't master anything in 12 days. Okay. You can't master anything in 12 years if it's worth learning. So just keep that in mind. It was a money grab, whatever. And so the one thing that I walked out of there with, half the reason I went was just to watch him work. Okay. This guy founded it. He'd been doing it for a long time, and I found out how long. So he's on stage and he goes, this is exactly how he said it. He goes, I've been doing this shit for 40 fucking years. And I look at that and I go, huh. Wow. I was screwed. Then I was screwed because I asked a question, because questions pull and answers push. I go, I wonder what that feels like. I wonder what that feels like to do something for 40 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And I didn't answer the question. I just posed it and I walked out. Okay. And then I answered it I'm in the process of answering it. It's going to take me 50 years to answer the question, what does it feel like to do something for 50 years? So I get off, you see that? And so I get off stage at TED and I go, I'm in. After 10 years in the game of it just holding my attention the whole time, my fascination, my obsession. I mean, I nerd out on this stuff. The energy that I am bringing to this conversation, it's very real. It's not a joke. It's like I get riled up to do this stuff and to talk about this stuff, relentlessly talk about this stuff. And I go, I'm going to do it for 50 years professionally. And then I went and got into my calendar and it took me a while to get there. Scrolled down to January 17th, 2057, because I went pro January 17th, 2007. And so it's in my calendar. That's my last day of work.
Whoa.
It's in my calendar.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool, Mark. So just to kind of recap that, your TEDx talk, by the way, for our audience and listeners out there, is titled Identity Versus Process, Reinterpreting Failure. You talk about a lot of the similar word theory that you are talking about now in teaching at Enlifted. And now you have set yourself into this path of a 50-year goal, and you started 2007, which was when you quit your job as a fighter, and now you are fighting a different fight. Mark, talk to us about that journey so far, and where are you at, and what is this 1,000 podcast goal that you have, and how does that fit in there?
You know, what's this path like for me? We've graduated, so technically we've graduated 390 coaches. We've got five certifications running right now. Wow. One level two and four level ones. And there's 10 people per cert on each of those level ones. So we're in the process of graduating the next 40 coaches, which makes it 430. And I'm going to so 43 level one certs. They're 9 weeks long, intense. And I'm the head coach. I deliver all of our trainings, everything. And I'm going to do our certifications. They turn 5 years old next month in May. We've been doing it 5 years. And I'm going to do the first 100 certifications. Level one certifications. So at this pace, I'm looking at another 6.5 to 7.5 years.
Beautiful.
And then I'm not teaching directly anymore. We'll roll out. So some of the coaches will be in position to do that very, very well.
There you go.
And so I've got, what's it like for me? I've got just a handful of goals. Really, you know, And one of them is to do the first 100 certifications. That's fucking bragging rights, big time. That and I'm playing for keeps. To do 1,000 podcasts. It was a number. It was a number I picked out of my head. And I'm like, that looks and feels cool. And I like doing cool shit. And so, I mean, who's guested on 1,000 podcasts? It's like, there's not that many people that have done that. Okay. Or will do that. So I'm going to put myself in an exclusive group. I want to know what I'm talking about. Okay. I want to know what I'm talking about. And part of the process of knowing what you're talking about is talking about it. Okay.
Talking about it.
Yeah. You think you're going to be an expert like day one? No, you're not. And
like you said, repetition is the mother of all skills.
Dude, it's so true. 1,000
podcasts will put you out there.
Yeah.
And talk about more about what you do.
And then 50 years. And then 50 years. Those are my three main goals right now. I don't have I do. That's like, you know, I could make more money doing other things. It totally, dude. And I listen, man, it's like I live a very simple lifestyle. Yeah, it's like, and it's, I could make way more money doing other stuff. And no, I'm doing this. And if I do those things, because here's in 50 year goal, you know what you can't rely on to pull that kind of shit off? You know what you can't rely on to go on 1,000 podcasts? You know what you can't rely on to certify 1,000 coaches, 10 at a time? You can't rely on motivation and inspiration.
Cannot. Resilience every day, discipline,
that right there. So yes, motivation and inspiration are better than insecurity and apathy and resignation, for sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. And half the time when people say, you know, I'm feeling really motivated right now, I'm right. Thinking to myself, yeah, sorry to hear that. Because that shit's going to fade. And you got to wait till it shows up. Discipline, you put these two things together and you can get whatever you want to get across the finish line. Discipline and curiosity. You put discipline and curiosity. What does it feel like to do something for 50 years? What a great question. And then discipline. I have that. And so you put those things together. Well, I've created it. And like, just to dovetail back, if I'm not into it, I'm not going to be disciplined about it. If it's not interesting, I mean, I've got the track record of me just being fucking deviant when I get bored. And so you put together – so because I'm fascinated with this stuff, that majorly influences my work ethic, okay, which – that's the discipline. And then the curiosity, it's like, okay, it's an interesting game. So it's an interesting position I find myself in that I wake up in every day and I'm like, okay, go to work, just like today. So this podcast, and then so it's 11 o'clock right now, 12 o'clock. I'm doing a workshop for 30 movement coaches in San Diego that are apparently getting their ass kicked by the imposter syndrome. And then I've got two-hour coaching sessions for our level one groups. In the afternoon, wake up tomorrow, two-hour coaching sessions, and then I drive in and go watch the fights with my buddy. Sunday, three two-hour coaching sessions, and it's just if I wake up and pour myself into this thing, I sleep like a rock.
Wow!
Because I did the damn thing that day.
You did the damn thing, and you did one thing. You did everything to chip away at that goal. Mark, recap that to us. 1,000 podcasts, 1,000 certified coaches, and 50 years of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes discipline. It takes curiosity. You have to love it. Mark, what is it? What else is it that you think requires that kind of... Because now you got me interested. You know, now I'm thinking, what is it that I want to do for the next 40 years? What is it that I want to do for the next, even just next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
The mindset is important.
About 10, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even just 10. Mindset is important. Words are important. What stories we're going to tell them. But Mark, it's tiring. It gets really tiring. You said you sleep a rock every day, but you do it. How do you wake up the next day and get it done again?
Well, how do I do that? It's you know, I could, another way of saying it is I want to.
There you go.
I want to do it. So I'm doing it. And as far as now, let's talk about reviewing. Let's review some of the finer points of that story that I told you.
Please.
After doing this work for 10 years and being in love with it, I looked around and saw it for what it was. Okay, I didn't see it for that, like, because I did say that. If you remember, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Yes. So I've seen grown men cry from the statement, the sentence, the spell. I need to find my purpose.
Wow.
I've seen grown men cry saying, I need to find my purpose. Well, guess what? You're probably not going to recognize it as such when it shows up.
Yeah.
And so you need a better metric.
Of course.
You need a better yardstick. So here's a way better one than that.
Please.
And so I watched people like twist themselves in knots, take out the like with that sentence. I'm like, okay, take out the like. I'm going to figure this one out. So the metric is explore your interests.
Explore your interests.
Develop your passions. I was very interested in this stuff when I first saw it. And I explored that interest. And it held my attention and got better. So it became a passion. And I committed to it as like, I'm going to do this professionally. And after 3 years of studying, I did. And then after 10 years of doing it professionally, I go, this is, and guess what? You don't need what purpose. I need to find my purpose. Why did they say I need to find my purposes? You can have multiple. Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
And right. And I looked, I, after 10 years of this doing everything I needed it to do for me and more, I go, okay, this is one of my purposes and I commit to your purposes. So the thing is, you want to get there, find, explore your interests and stop doing shit you're not interested in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh,
so, you know, maybe how long have you been, dude, it's a big deal. How long have you been doing jiu-jitsu for?
I've been doing it for over 2 years now, almost three.
Okay, very cool. Maybe you're going to get your black belt and have your own school.
Someday, I'd love to. Why not? I actually talked to my friend about that, and I'd love to open a gym. If it means that I just get to train jiu-jitsu my entire life and, you know.
That's a great life. Most people hate their life.
That sounds fun. That sounds like a great life to have and just sustain my life like that. I'm just going to learn stuff because jiu-jitsu is like a process of learning. It's great. It's great. It's a fun thing, you know?
It's got all the things. It's got community. It's got health and fitness. It's got the badassness. It's all the stuff. Let's say you get to 100 podcasts and you're like, man, that was amazing. I commit to doing this for the next 5 years. And then you're like, okay, this is one of my purposes too. So you could be business podcasting jiu-jitsu black belt. Yeah. And I mean, that's fucking cool.
Sounds pretty badass. I'd let's go that. Let's go that way, right? Mark, explore your interests, develop your passion, and commit to it. Develop your passion and
commit to your purpose.
Get committed. Commit to your purpose. Mark, I love that because I agree with that when people say, like, what's your purpose? No, it's multiple stuff. And
I can only have one? Huh?
Come on, right? And it kind of ties back to what you said. Like, I have financial goals, but that just happens naturally because of all these bigger goals that I have. And it's the same with purpose, right? You don't get to just zero. You don't have to zero in on one purpose. You just have to explore these things, try everything, develop what you're good at, and commit to this, and you'll find your purpose. It'll just come a long way. It'll just fall in naturally. I love that, Mark. And, you know, thank you for teaching that in such a simplified way.
My pleasure. It's one of my calling cards. Simplicity.
Simplicity. Mark, I do want to keep you longer, but this has gone on an hour. But before
Alex Pereira or Jamal Hill?
Oh, Well, I was thinking we talk about that off record, but Alex Pereira or Jamahal Hill? Oh, man.
It's the main event for UFC 300, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going for Pereira, honestly. Yeah. I'm going for Pereira. I think I'm pretty surprised how fast he's become a champion. I've always thought that, you know, he's probably just overhyped. But as soon as he won that fight with Izzy, I thought that was it. I think he is Izzy's kryptonite. And the way that he kept winning, he's legit, man. He is so legit. He will win this, no question, I think.
He's got an X factor. Jamahal Hill is very smooth. He's very smooth. And, as far as striking is concerned, okay, 4-ounce gloves, anything can happen. And as far as striking is concerned, I doubt Jamal's going to try to take him down.
Should.
Dude, Pereira, yeah, I know, you're right. Pereira, what hasn't he seen in glory? It's like, he's laughing at these MMA strikers like Sean Strickland. And then another conversation about that is, this is Jamal's first fight off of ruptured Achilles heel surgery.
Oh,
that's shit's no joke.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, yeah.
This is his first fight since then. Because he relinquished the title because of that.
Yeah, he did relinquish the title. Okay, now I remember. Oh, come on. I don't know, man. I don't know how.
It's tough, dude. I've been injured, dude. It's hard. It's a thing to come back from.
I don't think he. I don't see him coming off of that. Pereira's in a hot streak. He's
correct. Yep.
I think he's completely. He's terrifying, man. I'm terrified of seeing him just through the screen. I'm like, this guy is getting.
And all the fighters say that. They're like, he's absolutely huge and super intimidating.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help that he's got a really intimidating entrance and a really intimidating, walk into the cage. Crazy. The way he puts that face paint
bro,
on, just crazy identity.
It's creepy.
It's crazy. Creepy. Gaethje or Holloway?
I hate this, man. I really do. Who doesn't like Max? Yeah, if someone doesn't like, and I rarely say shit like this. If you don't like Max Holloway, I don't like you.
Exactly. But who doesn't like Justin as well? Right? I love Justin.
Me too. Right? And here's where I'm going with this. So I met Justin Gaethje's cousin when I was driving through the mining towns. Okay. of North Arizona, and I stopped in this bumfuck town, had no stoplights. There was one diner. I walk in there. I'm the only person, and there's this 22, 23-year-old girl waitressing, and, I order some food, and I go, you wouldn't happen to know Justin Gaethje, would you? And she goes, that's my third cousin.
Way. Oh,
and yes. I go, and this is a true story. This might come out as a true story. I said, I'm a big fan. We've got a podcast. We want to interview him. And I gave her $100 tip on a $13.
Let's go.
And she was like, yeah, I'm going to get him in touch with you and all this stuff. And I walked, and she didn't, which who cares? But I do. She is connected on Instagram. So whatever. If I ever meet you, Justin. No, we didn't. We didn't get. No, I'll get it. I'll hang out with that guy. He likes to shoot. I like to shoot too. And so here's where I'm going with this. I love Max. I love Justin, and Justin is going to hurt Max.
Yeah, he will.
Even though it's super hard to hurt Max, like I don't want to see Max get hurt. Like that, Justin Gaethje has got the most dense bones in the UFC. Of anyone in the UFC, they analyzed his bones.
They did. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think it's because his all that mining and like
yes exactly
no he's like Wolverine he's like fucking Wolverine, dude.
Oh, that's funny.
He has the strongest bones of anyone in the UFC.
That's so funny. And Wolverine had a movie where he was mining too, right? Wasn't he in the mining thing?
Yeah,
as
that's
well?
Where he's Northern Arizona, insane. Like mining towns.
There you go, right there, the mining town. Man, I love Max Holloway. I just love the guy, but I agree. I don't think he has the stamina, but I don't think he has the power to knock Gaethje out.
Oh, not even close.
He's probably just going to pepper him at most, but that's it.
And get his legs chewed up.
Oh,
Gaethje's going to chew up his wheels, dude.
That sucks because I love Max. I can't watch that.
No one likes that fight. No one likes that fight. Oliveira versus.
Yeah, exactly.
Why no one likes the fight.
Together? Fuck.
It's like.
Fuck. It's God like, damn it, Dana.
Yeah.
Oliveira Chikarian. Armand and Oliveira.
Oh, right.
This is a tough one because we got our Jits guy representing on the other side, and then you got the Russian.
What is he, Sambo?
That's, yeah, he's looking unstoppable. Guy. Yeah, come on. It's a tough one. Of course, we want the Jits guy to win, right? I'm happy.
Oliveira by armbar. Oliveira by armbar.
Oliveira by armbar.
He's gonna lock his arm out.
Oliveira by armbar. God, it's a crime we never got to see Oliveira and Khabib.
Correct.
That would have been
and Tony and Khabib. That was the ultimate. That fight got booked four times.
Four times. What a curse, right?
It was snake bit, as we say in the state. When something is unlucky, it's snake bit. That fight was snake bit.
And Tony was never the same. After his one loss, he was never the same. That was his literally.
To bring Gaethje back into it, he was never the same after the Gaethje fight. You could see it when something like he just kept getting smashed, and then he like turned away and like shook his head, and like something broke in that guy's fucking head.
Something broke. Yeah, I remember that exact moment you were saying. Mm-hmm. You're just like you don't want to see it because I love Tony, and every time,
oh god,
I caught every loss, and it broke my heart every single time. Like, god, Tony, please just retire, maybe, man.
Please stop. Oh, that's crazy. Like David Goggins in your corner is not going to fucking help. Please stop, Tony. Please.
Please stop. Oh, God. Mark, this has been great. I usually just like kind of like wrap this up on like a question or like on whatever. But plug yourself, Mark. We know you're on and lifted. We'd love to have that free first coaching course that you've sent us. Let us know if we can have that or where can we find that? Where can we find you? Where can we connect with you, Mark? Where are you at? Instagram, LinkedIn, please let us know.
We got three things, everybody. Thank you. So for the certs and all the other stuff. So the course that Joshua was referring to that he took, go to enlifted.me and register for the three. It's a free manual, the top three mistakes most mindset coaches make, and that will put you into the ecosystem. And we're very judicial with emailing and contacting. It's only cool shit, and it's not much of it. And so you'll find out about all the other stuff that we offer, including the online courses and the certification. That's that. Get Enlifted podcast. So it's coaches talking about coaching. I'm one of the co-hosts. Kimberly is the host. She's the host. I'm one of the co-hosts, and we just talk about coaching and application and transformation of mindset and transformational wordsmithing and all the badass stuff when it comes to word story and breath. That's Get Enlifted. Okay. You can find it anywhere. And then Instagram, at @enlifted_coaches. Yeah. If you follow us, I do it about every 2 weeks. I send all of our new followers personal voicemail invitation, just hellos and where'd you come from, and start talking about this stuff because it's part of my job.
That's really dope, Mark, and this has been a dope episode. I have the words. I will find the words. It's been great. It's been badass. It's been incredible. This is probably the most natural flowing podcast I've ever been on and I've ever had. Mark, I am totally honored. I am stoked. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Joshua. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
To all our audience listeners out there, you heard it here. You got it all. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I do. See you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.
All right, so here's the thing. We try to get a little bit better every day, but we can't do it without you. So if you like the video, make sure to like and subscribe below. And if you have any comments, just leave them in the space under.